Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast. This week we're continuing the discussion on PlayStation dropping physical games, as this topic has really resonated with everyone, especially you, our listeners and viewers. We're also joined by T3's tech editor, Mike Lowe, who's fresh from Samsung's Unpacked event and loaded with all the info on their trio of brand new foldable phones.
But before we get into all of that, a quick word from our friends at CEX.
Whether you're into the latest flagship tech or hunting down a bargain, getting the most for your money has never been more important.
And that's where our friends at CEX come in.
Because they'll buy your unwanted phones, tablets, laptops, games, consoles, cameras, and loads more, giving you cash or even more value in in-store credit.
And if you're buying, CEX has a huge range of pre-owned tech, from the latest smartphones and games consoles to laptops, smartwatches, VR headsets, and even retro gaming classics. There's something for every budget.
And unlike buying from a random online marketplace, everything comes with a 5-year warranty, giving you genuine peace of mind.
So whether you're looking to upgrade, trade in, or simply see what your old gadgets are worth, head to WeBuy.com or visit your local CEX store. You might be surprised just how much value is sitting around your house.
Before we get started, though, you might notice this week a little less Susie, as she is unfortunately not that well, but we're hoping she'll be back with us next week. So get well, Suze. A quick follow-up to our conversation about Sony's decision to stop producing physical PlayStation games from 2028, which really struck a nerve with many of you. So firstly, thank you. There were hundreds of comments across YouTube and social media. It was fascinating reading through all of them. Turns out this is really something a lot of gamers care deeply about. Who knew? Barry Schutz on Patreon made a really interesting point. He'd seen reports that Microsoft could be looking at a system where you can transfer ownership of a digital game via a license key. This is great, Barry. Great idea. So in theory, if you wanted to sell a game or pass it to a friend, you could transfer that license instead of handing over a disc. I like that. I mean, obviously, you know, you might have paid 70 quid for it. So yeah, it makes sense. Now, if that genuinely becomes a reality, I think that would be a really positive step and might allay some of our biggest concerns, you know. So if that were to become a reality, I think that would be a really positive step, because one of the biggest concerns people have with digital games is that we're losing our ability to trade them or lend them to a friend and, of course, sell them on a couple of years later. It's one of the things that many of us have been doing for decades. You wouldn't get the lovely physicality of a game or a cartridge in my case, or a floppy disk, or a, you know, a disk in a box. There's a lovely tactile relationship that we have with those. They are collector's items, but at least you would retain some of the financial investment that you make in a game. Barry also said something else that resonated with me. He said, maybe it's because we're from an older generation that we like physically holding something and knowing that it belongs to us. Maybe you're right, Barry, but equally, I don't think wanting to own something you've paid for should necessarily be considered old-fashioned. Ian Luke Jones raised another excellent point. He said, if consoles are moving to an all-digital future, the manufacturers need to massively increase the amount of storage they include as standard. Interesting point, because at the moment we're being asked to download games that are, you know, 100 gigs or whatever. And then once we've filled up the console, we're expected to spend another couple of hundred quid on additional storage. That's a really good point. Mick Tonks really brought home that this isn't just a debate for collectors. He wrote to say that his disabled 40-year-old son loves his PlayStation 5, but because of the risks associated with being online, he only plays physical games. So for him, physical media isn't nostalgia. It's the way he's able to enjoy gaming safely. That's a really unique perspective. Okay, so when we recorded the podcast in question, I suggested maybe we start a petition. But it turns out we don't need to, because there is already an existing petition that's gathered more than 300,000 signatures from gamers around the world on change.org. And the basic thrust is that they want to protect physical games and consumer ownership. Rather than splitting support across multiple campaigns, I think it makes sense to get behind the one that's already gained real momentum. So if you agree with what we're talking about, we've put a link to the petition in the comments below. I've signed up. I believe in this. It's going to be sent to Sony, important decision makers at Sony. And you know, I think it makes more sense rather than a gadget show separate petition. Have a read, make your own mind up, obviously. Make sure that you agree that the focus of the petition makes sense to you. It does to me. Ultimately, it's your decision. I just want to finish with one final comment because I think it perfectly captures why this conversation has resonated with so many of us. Now, it's from a YouTube commentator. I'd love to be able to say their name, but I just can't read it. It's like Elkules the Third. Let's say that. Here's the quote: "If buying isn't owning, then piracy isn't stealing." Wow, damn, well said. So, before anyone jumps on that, we're not obviously on the Gadget Show podcast endorsing piracy, but it makes you think, doesn't it? You know, I think if what you're really getting is something that you cannot resell and you cannot, in a sense, in a you know, an important sense of ownership, own, then it does raise all kinds of other big philosophical questions. So I think that's a really, really telling point. If companies increasingly tell us that we're not buying products anymore, you know, only temporary licenses, then inevitably consumers are going to start asking, you know, what this ownership deal is really about. And we saw that, didn't we? I would argue the early days of digital music, the MP3 revolution. Let's be honest, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of people were illegally downloading the music they wanted. And it wasn't because they wanted to partake in a criminal act. It was actually because they couldn't get music easily at a reasonable price. And that's where I would wager one of the reasons why Apple became so successful in the digital music market was because they offered a simple way of getting music at a reasonable price. So, you know, it's really worth making these points and it's really worth getting behind this movement. So obviously, you know, your comments hugely matter. You can see that by the quality of the ones that I've read out today. So do let us know what you think. And if you want to support the petition, if you think it makes sense to you, you'll find the link waiting for you in the description of the comments of this podcast. Quick question. If I handed you £5,000 and dropped you into CEX right now, what would you buy? Because one of our Patreon supporters is about to find out.
That's right. After our previous winner, Richard Wykes, won big last series, we're giving another lucky supporter £5,000 to spend at CEX.
And £5,000 at CEX goes a very long way. You could pick almost anything from your tech wish list.
Like a gaming PC, a PlayStation 5 Pro, an Xbox Series X, a Nintendo Switch 2 for family game nights, a 32-inch TV for the bedroom, a big OLED for the living room, a premium soundbar, a 4K Blu-ray player,
a MacBook Pro, a new iPhone, an iPad, an Apple Watch, AirPods Pro, a flagship Android phone, or a powerful gaming laptop,
a DSLR camera, a couple of lenses, a drone to capture your holiday from above, an action camera, a smartwatch, noise-cancelling headphones for the daily commute, a VR headset, or a tablet to keep the kids entertained.
Or go retro with a Dreamcast, a GameCube, an N64, a PlayStation 2, and a stack of retro games.
Whatever your tech obsession, £5,000 at CEX could completely transform your setup. And thanks to our friends at T3, the winner will also receive a one-year subscription to the T3 magazine.
How very cool. To win with the chance of winning, simply become a Patreon supporter. Depending on your membership tier, you'll automatically receive one, three or five entries into the draw.
Every Patreon supporter gets ad-free episodes, early access to new shows, exclusive bonus content and access to our brilliant community of fellow gadget lovers.
And if you join the Max tier, you'll also unlock the entire Gadget Show archive. That's nearly 20 years of gadget reviews, epic road trips, legendary crashes. It doesn't say that in my script. It says challenges, but that was a thing, especially for Susie Perry.
Yes, indeed.
Behind the scenes extras and plenty of iconic gadget moments.
Head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow to join, and you'll find all the competition details plus the full terms and conditions in the episode description. So good luck.
So Samsung has just wrapped up its latest Unpacked event, and as always, there was plenty to get excited about. The headline announcements, well, the brand new Galaxy Z Fold 8, the all-new Galaxy Z Fold 8 Ultra, and the Galaxy Z Flip 8, Samsung's latest attempts to prove that foldable really is the future of smartphones. How exciting. Joining us to break it all down is Mike Lowe, tech editor at T3. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Hello. Good, thank you. Yeah.
Good to see you, who was at the launch and has already been hands-on with all three devices. Did you not want to just slip one in your back pocket, Mike, and just make
The security is quite extreme, so I'm going to get one later today.
Oh, that's good. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the Gadget Show podcast. It's great to have you with us. Yeah, talk us through the three phones. What were your first impressions?
So it's a massive year because typically Samsung's launched the little flippy one and then a much bigger kind of almost like a tablet size kind of foldable. And this year they've introduced a third one called the Z Fold 8, which is kind of not quite in between, but it's a different format. So it's less tall, it's much wider. And it's kind of, I guess it's going to be the new format that's going to have a lot of attention on it, not just because of Samsung, but later this year, there's largely expectation that a certain Apple is going to launch an iPhone Ultra, which is basically going to be a similar format. The two key ones that they've gone for years now is the Z Flip, which now is the Z Flip 8, which is like almost like half a phone, and then you can unfold that to have a sort of standard size. Then the one they've also done for years is now called the Z Fold 8 Ultra. Nearly got that wrong because they've added the Ultra name.
Yeah, interesting.
And that is exactly as it was before in terms of format. So it's like really tall and narrow. And then you open it up and it's got a massive like 8-inch screen on the inside. And then in between those is this brand new one, which is called the Z Fold 8, which has it's a 10 to 16 aspect on the front. So it's much squarer, it's less tall, it's a bit wider. Some people have been calling it the wide, which isn't the official name. And that just brings a totally new kind of format basically. So it gives all these different options. And I think Samsung's view is like the flip is kind of the fun, funky one, more of a style phone.
Okay.
This brand new format is very much aimed at content consumption because it fits, you know, your Netflix or whatever you might be watching, YouTube, etc., better than the other format. And then the Ultra is kind of more at the business end. It's a bit more serious. You know, when you unfold it, you can have like two apps side by side as if you're holding two phones. You can interact between those and stuff like that. So they're trying to cover all bases through format, basically, in terms of aspects. That's kind of the summary.
Right. And does it feel like a tablet? So I know that there's so much work has been done, and I'm sure you'll mention some of the tech behind this around the fold and getting rid of it so that what you have is a tablet experience. Those of us that are, you know, used to watching 16:9 kind of screens and mini, you know, looking at content in that sense, how does this 4:3, which is more like an old 80s cathode ray tube format, how does that feel in terms of user experience?
So you know, this is an Android phone, which is kind of under the Google system. I cannot think of ever there being a 4:3 screen in Android. Like any tablet previously hasn't had that. So it's definitely a step change to move towards that, because not to compare it too much, but if you go to an iPad, as in Apple's tablet, that's exactly 4:3. So Samsung is really pushing into brand new territory here and saying, oh, this is going to be like the new format that everyone seems to be behind. So I think they're getting behind it too. And it's going to be that kind of, in theory, the new trend that they want to push, because yeah, like I say, by the end of this year, I think it's going to have a lot of attention on it for sure.
What about the competition from other brands other than Apple? I mean, we featured the Honor. In fact, we're going to have a bit of a report on it from Susie when she's back quite soon, which is a lovely bit of kit. I mean, who else is doing what in this sector that maybe we should look out for?
There's a lot, actually, but no one else at the moment is going for this new, you know, aspect ratio, this new format. Thinking through, you've got Google. They're on to their third generation now. As you say, Honor have got the Magic V6, which has come out quite recently. There are lots of other brands, but a lot of them are like Chinese brands that don't actually launch in the UK or beyond into the States and stuff. So a really good example is Oppo. They've got the Find N6, which is an amazing bit of kit as well, but you can't buy one. And we were talking briefly about the whole crease issue, right?
Yeah.
So when you unfold, there's a hinge and they have to work out ways of negating that and how the screen can sit flat. So Oppo's approach is basically doing tiny little 3D prints and popping them in to negate that space to make it as flat as possible, which worked very well. And it was the best I'd seen at the time. And now Samsung has come along and they've introduced what they call flex titanium technology.
Yeah, that's right. That's what they were talking about. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so the marketing name they've gone with is flex titanium technology. And it's pretty wild, to be honest. Like, they have genuinely taken titanium, which is a metal chemical element, I believe, and made it fold. They've done so by making it super, super thin. They've like laser etched these tiny little marks through it, so it actually folds, and that sits behind the display panel itself. You can't see it, but the reason for it is it's, you know, super stable, it's flatter, and the purpose is to have something that can basically make it more rigid once it's unfolded to negate that crease and just make a much more sort of smooth flat surface that some foldables previously have lacked delivering in a really quality way. So it's very impressive, but it's kind of hidden, so you almost don't know that's there, but the work behind the scenes is pretty incredible.
That's absolutely, isn't that amazing? Absolutely, yeah. Extraordinary. The offering of a mini tablet is very appealing to me, if only that fold over time doesn't start to reveal itself. What do we think? What were you getting from your hands-on, from their blurb, from that cool innovation, that cool science that suggests that in a year's time of use, Mike, I'm not going to have a dirty great big crease down the center of my new Samsung?
I mean, they do a lot of testing behind the scenes, but again, you don't see it. But the machines, when they test them, they'll fold them, you know, 200, 300,000 times just to make sure it can. And I've seen these machines in factories where they're just going back and forth and back and forth. So they thoroughly test as much as they can. Titanium should be stable. So, you know, they make golf clubs out of titanium because it resists deformation, basically. So theoretically, it should be good. There might be some adjustment over time, and obviously I've only seen this device for a matter of hours so far, but you know, I'll dig into it, and it's hard to answer. You know, it should be better than anything previous because of what they've done behind the scenes. Will it be perfect? You're always going to see a slight crease if you look at a really steep angle, but front on, it should look good to the user. Like, you sound ideal. You sound like the exact person this phone is for, really.
Yeah, we were talking last night, actually, my wife and I, about screen time on a daily basis and how appalling our screen time use is. Like, but there's just so much great stuff out there, and I want to learn and experience. And I think, you know, on a screen that I'm guessing, you know, you can have multiple items open on, is very, very appealing. So that's obviously my most, that's the feature that I find most exciting, and that great titanium tech behind it. What about you? Any other great features? Camera, battery life?
Actually, another thing that's changed, and this has taken a long time, a lot of other brands are using what's called silicon carbon battery types. Honor, for example, has been, I think, three generations now, which is basically a way of having a battery that's physically smaller but more dense, so it can deliver more power without using up as much space inside the device. Right. And that is now in all three of these flip foldable devices from Samsung. It's the first time they've got around to doing that, because they've been just making sure they're thoroughly testing. That hopefully will bring longer battery life that people have been asking for so long, and that's really going to finally get them sort of back in that game. So yeah, that's a big sort of addition to this series, and probably going forward, I think that is going to be the new standard that we'll see from Samsung and its flagships as well.
And what about camera? I mean, obviously it's incredibly important. We'd normally be selling a phone, wouldn't they? They'd normally be selling a phone based just on the camera performance. What are the specs?
This is where it probably differs the most, because the device that's added the Ultra name is most similar to their flagship normal phone, the S26 Ultra. Yeah. And the cameras are basically the same. You get three on the back, so you've got a zoom, you've got a normal and a wide angle, really high resolution, loads of AI features, like really capable, very, very good. But then this newer, more sort of stubby format, the wide, as some people are calling it, drops the zoom camera, doesn't have quite as much resolution. So they're kind of dropping that down slightly in the standards, and it's a little bit more affordable as a result. So if you want all the camera stuff, you have to go with the more established format and aspect ratio, whereas this new device is going a little bit more light on the camera front.
That makes a lot of sense, because relative camera technology in terms of size, integration and function has reached such a high quality, hasn't it? I mean, it's absolutely extraordinary. And of course, the instant comparison is to the iPhone, isn't it? The much leaked iPhone foldable coming in the autumn. Do you think what we're seeing here is something very, very similar? And that I'm pretty sure the answer is yes, but it's overtly an attempt by Samsung to meet them in the autumn with a similar device.
Yeah, I mean, it pretty much has to be. Any phone with an AMOLED screen, Samsung makes those displays. That is the company that makes them. So this format, when you unfold it with that 4:3 aspect ratio, it's almost certainly going to be the exact same screen that you're going to find in Apple's supposed phone. You know, we've been talking about it for years and years. It hasn't arrived, but I think now has to be the time. I think it's just going to be the year when it really explodes and reaches a wider audience. So we'll see. Obviously, Samsung's different in the way, you know, we talk about that flex titanium technology. That doesn't go anywhere else. That's theirs. So how Apple deals with things like the crease, we'll have to see. We don't know, but wait till September. We'll see what comes.
It's really exciting. We need some innovation, don't we? We've been iterating innovations for several years. Yet more kind of camera horsepower. This is something truly different. And I think we are in the content age, for better or for worse. You know, we're kind of peak content. So it makes sense, doesn't it, that a device that offers you that, you know, that world in a more convenient format is going to be the thing to go for.
And it's really interesting because those formats are so different. Like when you're holding it, you can just use it like a normal phone. And then it's different enough when you open it up to go, oh, I'm going to use this for this other reason. I think some of the foldables I've used over the years before, particularly the Google is one example, it's so much like a normal phone when you're using it that sometimes I just don't bother unfolding it because it's just so good in that format. I think what Samsung's managed to fall upon here is like a format that, you know, it's two very different things, but both are very usable. So I think, or at least I hope, I'll find out over the coming days when I'm using it, I'm going to actively want to be moving between those formats for very different things. I think that's a real positive that's been needed in this space, basically.
Sometimes a new format, a new technology can also push new media on us, new media experiences or formats. Case in point would be, the inclusion of the iPod into the first generation iPhones, and how that changed music, didn't it, and our consumption of it. And obviously, as a content creator myself, both independently and as part of the Gadget Show podcast team, I'm really interested to know, are we going to see new content through these devices? Do you know what I mean? Like we talk about vertical serialized videos, don't we? And the fact that Netflix are dabbling in that area and Instagram is starting to appear on our TVs. What do you think?
I think it's down to sales, right? Because if you're a developer and you've got this aspect ratio available, are enough people going to have access to that? So this is kind of that tipping point. If Apple goes down this route and if Samsung's being successful, then a developer might go, oh, you know what? We can do something really cool with that, that, you know, is a different viewpoint that's going to reach enough people to make it worthwhile. So it's kind of chicken and egg. We'll see where it gets to. It needs to amass enough sales that people are using it as a more standardized format for that to really be a jumping point, I think.
What about price?
Well, they're not cheap. And I think we knew that was going to be the case. Foldables have costed a lot for a long time. You're getting a lot of stuff, right? So it's kind of predictable. But if we start at the top, so the Z Fold 8 Ultra is £1,899. And by which I mean from. That's with the smallest amount of storage, so it goes up from there. Go down to the Z Fold 8, that's £200 less, so it will be from 1699, 1699. And then the little Flip 8 is, I believe, 1149. So there's quite a
Good
gap
grief.
between the three.
Wow.
Yeah, well, but here's the thing, because you think about a flagship phone. If you buy a flagship S26 Ultra, originally, when it came out in, I think it was February, what was it, just shy of £1,300. You go to Apple, the iPhone 17 is, you know, similar. If you add more storage, it keeps going up and up and up. So are people getting used to this? I suppose. Are contracts extending and changing? They have
I'm
done.
not. I'm not, dude. But then the argument, I suppose, is that these are crossover devices, aren't they? So that they cross over into your decision around getting a tablet or a new laptop. And if some of the functionality, especially with Samsung, because they're really good at extra functionality and extra, you know, devices and so on. They've always been good at those sort of peripheral things that you can do with them through various apps and so on, and an ecosystem that is so open. I can see an argument for spending a little bit more, you know, if it's a replacement device when you're traveling, you don't have to necessarily take your, you know,
yeah,
your tablet or your laptop. But
I was talking to some colleagues last night about it, because if you're doing it through a contract, it may literally be a case of adding another £10 a month. And yes, of course, it's going to add up over time. It might be £15 a month. We're not totally sure yet because we're awaiting those prices. But that might be okay to go, do you know what? I want to try this. This looks like a bit of me, and it could work. But yes, it's a huge amount of money to pay up front if you're going to you know drop basically £2,000 on a phone. And going back to Apple again, we'll see what that's going to be. We don't know.
Do we think that'll be north of £2,000, or do you think they'll drop it in the sort of 1,999?
I think it has to be 1,999. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or from.
From. No, yeah. Exactly. And then you'll have that very attractive extra memory that you, although I don't know. You see, what's interesting is for me, the reason I need a lot of memory on my iPhone is because I'm always recording content. I'm doing 4K videos and stuff. And actually, it feels to me like these phones are sort of saying, look, we're there with the camera now, but we're not too crazy about constantly upgrading the camera, because we're kind of at a level now where we can record the world in a really high resolution way. This is more about content. And if you're using it as a content device, storage isn't so important because you're streaming it. And I mean, I don't know, maybe people in the comments would completely disagree with me. That's just from the hip. Mike, it's good stuff. Where do you think we'll be in, say, 5 years with Unpacked? I mean, I'm going to make a play. Let me see what you think. It's going to be about the glasses in 5 years' time. I think we're going to go glasses mad. And I'm only saying that because Susie's not here. Otherwise, she'd be ranting about it, because she's not an advocate of everyone wearing glasses and filming her. But anyway, what do we think? 5 years' time, what's Unpacked going to look like? Are we going to be talking all about the glasses? Is this foldable screen technology going to have evolved to a point where it's just very, very normal and everyone's got one?
It's really hard to say, because, you know, we're 8 years in from Samsung's perspective now on this range. Many others have tried. Some have disappeared. Some don't do it anymore. Some don't launch in this country. So yeah, it's really difficult to answer. And even Samsung itself, they do two Unpacks a year. So they kind of divide it. So you get the normal flagships early in the year, in the spring, and then the summer Unpacked is this one where they dedicate it more to the foldables. So will we end up with both in one in the future? Will foldables be taken up by everyone? It depends if the price comes down. It depends, you know, on so many factors. It's really, really difficult to answer.
God, you sidestepped that, Mike. I mean, I went straight in there with glasses. I mean, I was right, my head on the block, my man.
They make those. They do make those as well. So, you know, that's definitely another area. But there's just so many challenges in that space, I think, at the moment. I mean, particularly for me as a glasses wearer and yourself, you know, I haven't quite found the thing that works for me as yet. And there's
Have
a lot
you
of
been
VR.
To Susie Perry?
not about this.
She is not a fan. She reckons that everyone's going to be filming her when she's out in the street. And I've resigned myself to that's the reality. Like, we're going to be filmed everywhere in the future, like some horrible science fiction movie. But I do think maybe 5 years hence, you know, we'll be moving to a meaningful pair of glasses. I know what you mean, Mike, as a glasses wearer, you know, don't you? Because you have the everyday reality of glasses, that having a battery on there and charging them is a bit of an inconvenience. But should we get to that point where glasses can last a couple of days without charging, and the display is giving us genuinely useful information rather than novelty stuff, they could be really, really big. And 5 years feels about right, doesn't it, in terms of that becoming normalized?
I think also you're going to have, you know, these brands want a full ecosystem, so they're going to, if they're going to create a product like that, it's going to be in tandem with you buying a very expensive phone that, you know, you get the best of all things. So we're not going to see the phones go away. These will just be, you know, the glasses might supplement it in a different format. So it's very much about expanding to deliver things in different ways. But yeah, I don't think the phones are going anywhere. Whether they're all foldables, again, a bit political on the answer, because just don't know. I mean, they're exciting and it's fun. It's a different thing. I think we need more of that kind of exploration and innovation, really.
Yeah, we were lucky, weren't we? Sort of turn of the 90s, that whole sort of 10-year period of massive innovation around pocket-sized electronics. We've been very, very fortunate. And it all seemed to happen, didn't it? Year after year, we went from MP3s to the whole kind of iPod ecosystem, and then the first iterations of smartphones, and then gaming on a phone and content, and then it's all been a bit flat. And so I think hopefully what we've done for our listeners and viewers today on the podcast, and huge thanks to you, Mike, for making it possible, is get a little bit excited about certainly a new innovation in a pretty niche area. But yeah, I'm really excited to experience it myself. Thanks for your time.
No worries. Thanks so much.
And that is it for another episode of the Gadget Show podcast. A huge thank you to our guest, Mike, from T3 for joining us and taking us through Samsung's latest foldables. And of course, a massive thank you to all of you for listening and watching, and certainly, especially this episode, commenting. Whether you've left a comment, shared the podcast, or simply just hit play and had a listen, we hugely appreciate your support. I'd also like to say a very special thank you to our Patreon supporters. You lot rock. If you're watching on YouTube, then right now you're going to be seeing your name on screen. Thank you so much. Your support helps us keep making more podcasts and more videos. We love it. And if you'd like to join the podcast posse, a very select bunch they are, you'll get ad-free episodes, early access to new shows, exclusive bonus content, access to our community, the full Gadget Show archive, and you'll automatically be entered into our £5,000 CX shopping spree giveaway. You can find out everything you need to know at patreon.com/thegadgetshow. Before we go, I just want to send our best wishes to Susie. We hope you're feeling a little bit better. And we're looking forward to having you back, Suze, with us on the podcast next week. Until then, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.